Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Murder Mile. Of course, as mentioned last week, this is not a regular Murder Mile. I'm currently away doing all the research, ready for the rest of the episodes in the Murder Mile series. But this is part two of New Blue. Hope you enjoyed it. That was part one last week and part three next week. As always, this is a discussion with my good friend Paul. He is a serving policeman in the Metropolitan Police. And what we did last week, we dived into all of his training that he did as a policeman. Next week, we're going to focus on his regular day as a policeman. But today's episode is all about his firsts. Everything that he did for the first time as a brand new probationary policeman in that very crucial first year at the Metropolitan Police. Just to say, at the very start of the episode, we do open some beers and we do the same at the end. So, if you don't like the sound of people glugging, might be worth fast-forwarding by just a wee swidge. And at the end of this episode, of course, is a tiny, tiny bit of extra mile, but mostly with a quiz. So please do stay for the end of the episode. It's a little bit of fun. Just as a warning, this is an unedited interview. It may contain some blue words, i.e. some fruity language. Ooh. And not all of the opinions may fully reflect the Metropolitan Police. Ladies and gentlemen, here is New Blue, Part 2. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back.
Cheers.
And here is a sound you might remember. Frothy. Lovely. As you can tell, we're just having a little bit of a pintage. I am having a Caffrey's.
And I am having a Guinness.
Well, there's a surprise, isn't it?
Extra stout, dark and lively.
Lovely, lovely jubbly.
Just found what's going on my gravestone.
That is your dinner.
Yeah, well, I don't drink it as much as I used to, but my signature tipple, yes.
Breakfast, lunch and dinner. So, Paul, welcome back.
Whoa.
Oh. Slurp o'clock. Lovely. refreshing.
Thanks for having me back.
No, you're more than welcome. So, firsts. Mm-hmm. We're going to dive into firsts.
Yeah.
Your first year as a policeman. So you've just come out of training.
Yeah.
You've done 13 weeks at Hendon. What happened next? Do you decide where you're going to be posted?
Well, when you first apply for the police, you are asked six different boroughs in London. Was it six? Yeah, I think it was six different boroughs in London that you'd like to work in.
Mm.
Now, I didn't want to work in the borough that I live in. Some people do. But the idea of, you know, waiting in the doctor's surgery or being in the local Asda or just having a drink on a night off, and it's like, oh, I nicked you for beating up your wife last week. Just doesn't appeal to me. I didn't want to work in the borough that I grew up in.
Okay.
Just personally, there's no reason why you can't, but I just thought I wanted to try and experience a bit more of London. So I put one borough that I knew relatively well in the west side of London, and the other five boroughs that I just never worked in. And I thought, can I physically, because I don't drive, can I physically get there for work? In the end, I didn't get any of the ones I asked for. I got the one I'm on, which is a neighbouring borough to where I grew up, so I know very well. And yeah, so you're literally told, when you become a police officer, you get shoulder numbers.
Yeah.
And those shoulder numbers are made up with a number.
Yeah.
And also the prefix of the borough that you work on.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I got my shoulder number and I was like, oh, I didn't pick this one. Oh, well. You very much go where you're needed.
Yeah.
They are very sympathetic. I have friends who they were put in one borough and within a couple of weeks they were like, look, I feasibly cannot make an early turn or I can't get home on a night shift. So they're very understanding.
Yes.
But to a certain degree, you'll go where you're told to.
Great. Yeah. Do you think it really, because you're born and bred in London, do you think that really helped you?
I'd say yes, because I know most of London relatively well.
Yeah.
I'm not very big on East London.
Yeah.
If you ask, because I don't drive, I operate the cars a lot. If you ask a lot of my drivers if it's a good thing that I know the way, I know the borough very well. I know very well to stagger around whilst pissed, but trying to get a car down a road is always fun.
With your GPS kebab.
Yeah. Google Maps. GPS kebab, just pointing the chili in the right direction.
One thing I should have said at the start. So when you became a policeman, you were issued a uniform.
Yes.
Is that all standard?
Yes.
So what does it entail, your uniform?
Patrol trousers, patrol shirt, tie.
I'm guessing they're quite itchy and heavy, because they look heavy.
The uniform itself isn't. It's quite cheap polyester, so it's not too bad. Yeah. It's not too heavy.
It looks like it gets quite warm.
It does get quite warm. It does get quite warm, especially the weather we've had at the moment. It's been a bit sweltering. So you get that. You get a beat helmet, which everyone's familiar with, and a patrol cap, which is more of a peaked military cap.
What's the difference between them, and why would you wear one, not the other?
The beat helmet is more ceremonial, I think, in this day and age.
Okay. That's the kind of the big conical thing that people probably... I wasn't going to say that, that people are kind of used to as a typical British policeman.
Yeah, that's very much seen as more ceremonial than anything else now. Yeah. You will see a lot of officers in Westminster wearing them because, you know, it's very much associated with the Metropolitan Police. But more often than not, I'll wear the patrol cap, which is more of a peaked military cap.
Yes.
And, of course, you've got your belt that's got your baton, your spray, your handcuffs, your taser if you're a taser-trained officer.
Are these all your personal ones, or do you just go to, like, an armament store or something?
Everything apart from the taser is personal issue.
Oh, okay. So you keep it all in your locker?
Yeah, that's all in your locker. You're not allowed to... There are certain circumstances you can take them home, like if you're going to another borough or if you're going to training. But no, they all stay in there. And, of course, your MET vest, your stab vest.
Is that really stab-proof?
Yes.
Is it heavy? It looks like it is.
It's stab-proof and to a certain degree and to a certain calibre bulletproof.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
but not... I mean, it's Kevlar.
Yeah.
But
and that basically covers just your main vital organs.
Yeah, your main vital organs basically.
So you've got a shirt, you've got a stab vest, and then on top of that you have your...
If you wear a jacket or a fleece, there's also in the winter months you have what we call a NATO jumper, which is a woolen jumper, which is not an issue anymore, but I managed to find one. I love wearing it because it looks quite smart. That's where you wear. I mean, the stab vest, I'm quite a big lad, so my stab vest is quite bulky. And I remember, I was talking to this with a friend the other day, I took it home from work one day because I think I was going training somewhere.
Yeah.
And I still had all my bits and bobs in it, so you have paperwork and clips and pens and a torch and all these kind of things. And I took it home, and my wife at the time said, oh, can I try it on? I went, yeah, of course, carry on. And she put it on and she was like, oh my God, this is heavy. I went, yeah, but you sort of get used to it. But she said, right, I want to find this out. So she disappeared and came back in the room. She went, I've just put that on and got on the scales. I weigh a stone heavier. So this thing is a stone.
Wow.
So, I mean, I can believe it. They're not all that bit much, but it's proportionate. Mine's probably that heavy because it's got all the stuff and it's built to fit me. But yeah, you don't realise how much shit you carry around on a regular basis.
Wow. So you've got your radio?
I have a radio,
yeah.
And you have a body-worn camera.
So does that... I take it you've got like a backup pack of like battery and memory?
No, the camera is self-charging. So when you finish your shift, you put it on a charge.
Okay.
And that also downloads all the footage to it.
Oh, wow.
All the footage from it to a main database.
Yeah.
That will... unless there's a reason you actually have the camera on and filming for a long period of time, that will last for the full shift, which is normally about 9 hours.
Do you have to switch it on at the start, or is it automatic?
The cameras are always rolling. The cameras are recording on a 30-second... I think it's a 30-second time-lap.
Okay.
But what you do is you physically turn them on.
Yeah.
So they're always recording, but they'll just delete it unless you let the camera know you want something filmed.
Oh, so it's not recording everything throughout the day?
No, you choose the moment. Well, it is recording, but it just deletes it. But you press a button to activate it, so it'll actually keep what it's recording.
So if you know that you're approaching a situation or something, I just tap it
straight away. There's several situations which you have to have your camera on, such as stop and searching someone, such as arrest. There's certain things, certain offences and certain allegations which you cannot record. I won't go into detail, but for reasons best known. And the battery and the radio should theoretically last your shift. But, you know, it depends. Things like, obviously, while we're recording this now, is just after what would have been Nottingham Carnival weekend and 2 weeks of action from Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah.
So people are coming in and out of your station on a regular basis. So batteries were like rocking horse shit.
Wow.
So you might find one that's not fully charged, but you just put it in the hope that someone comes in after you plugs it into the thing. So the radios are yours and the body worns are yours. They stay in your locker.
Okay.
As I said, the body worn is docked into like a big port in a wall.
So they're like, there's a serial number on them and they know exactly that it's yours.
It's yours. It's, you know, as is the radio. The radio has a radio number. It's almost like a mobile phone number.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Boots. I'm guessing they're just standard.
You don't get issued boots. You have to buy your own.
They don't issue boots. Why?
It's a bugbear. It's a very big bugbear. I don't know. Why, I don't know. I think they used to be issued. I think it's also people have personal preferences.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I've got a pair of boots that I think they cost £35 and they're fine. Some people go out and buy these like expensive makes like Altberg and I can't remember the other one. I will buy like military grade like SBS or SAS boots for like 150, 160 quid. You can do it, and obviously they offer a good set of sturdiness, but you know, in this day and age, it's not Bobby on the beat. You're in a car for the majority of your day.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, you're not going to wear and tear it too much.
That's interesting. Are you ever really on the beat, or are you always kind of going somewhere?
I have been on foot patrol.
Yeah.
Especially earlier on when I first started. But most of the time now, just for simplicity's sake and ease sake, you and a driver or a driver and you, depending on your skills, will be in a car together all day.
Okay. On your way to kind of pre-assigned... Oh.
You know, to Pret-a-Manger, Dunkin' Donuts. to pre-assigned calls. I mean, I work on a response team. So basically, when someone rings 999, it goes to the control centre and they send it to whatever borough the call is referred to. And then it's literally, we have a call, make your way.
Okay. That makes sense. So your first day as a policeman, do you remember it?
Vividly. I believe it was the 3rd of December 2017.
Holy moly.
3rd or 4th of December, actually. And it was an early shift, so I had to be into the station at 7 o'clock in the morning. It was myself and two others who'd come from Hendon with me, but they weren't in my class, so I didn't know them well.
Yeah.
And we went straight to team. Now, what sometimes happens, or which happens in the majority, is that you go from Hendon to your borough and you do what they call street duties. So it'll be a class of you with a couple of teachers, which will be just constables who, you know, in the teaching side. And they'll take you out, you'll go to cases, you'll go to incidents, and you'll deal with them. Sort of slow time.
Yeah.
So you've got someone looking after you. But in my case, which I actually preferred, I was what was called coach patrol. So what that meant was my first 5 or 6 weeks, I was with one person.
Oh, wow.
And we took calls. So it's literally you pushed into the deep end. But that person is someone who's trustworthy, knows what they're doing, and they have a bit of autonomy. Mm. It's not like you're going to go and do this, you're going to do that. They'll go to a sergeant or an inspector and go, right, Arsenal Guinness needs to improve on this particular kind. So we'll go to those kind of calls.
Oh, great.
Or Arsenal Guinness hasn't done this yet and the call's just come up, so we'll go and do that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That must have been really useful, actually, kind of having bespoke training.
I enjoyed it. I think if you've only got a few people, because there's intakes from Hendon every I want to say month. It might even be shorter than that. Yeah. So there's sometimes you have 30 people joining a borough. Sometimes you have three.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what the necessity is at the time.
Oh, wow, God. In your first year, were there any laws that kind of surprised you? That you were like, I didn't know that was illegal?
Not really.
Have you experienced them all anyway?
I've committed every crime there is. Not really. There were certain things where you didn't realise what the punishment was, so it could be so severe. But, there was nothing that I was sort of going, what? You're not allowed to take that out in a park? Oh, who knew?
You're not allowed to urinate.
I'm a criminal. So nothing really, really shocked or surprised me. There were certain laws that haven't been held up, and I remember when I first started, we'd heard about arresting someone for having a crossbow or arresting someone for theft of a hovercraft. And I just wanted to, I really want to arrest someone for one of those two things.
Is it on your list of to-dos?
It's on my list of to-dos, yeah.
Nice, nice. Here's one. Do you remember your first arrest?
Yes, I do. I do vividly. It was a very, very large man who I needed to get two pairs of cuffs and cuff them together to get his hands behind his back. He was a monster of a man.
Did he put up a fight, I take it?
No, surprisingly. But, I mean, when you go to certain things, you get a lot of intelligence. So if that person is known to police for whatever reason, you will be told what that is. So you'll prepare yourself for the best, the worst, the best way to deal with things. And I was told this man was a bit of a handful. So four of us went for the arrest. And I arrested him. And it was funny because you're just trying to stumble yourself through. You take your time, you breathe. But when you arrest someone, as I said in the first episode, you are hindering, it's a human rights issue. You have to have just cause to be doing what you're doing. So you have to have grounds for the arrest. Mm. And then you have to give the reasons for the arrest. Because sometimes arrest isn't necessary.
Yeah.
People think it's all about, banging cuffs on people going, you're nicked, my son. Mm. Which, to-do list, never said it, want to say it. there has to be reasons for the arrest. Because there's other ways of dealing with things. There's things we call community resolutions.
What's that?
It's where you might agree with the victim, depending on the nature of the crime, that you might say to the victim, right, we'll record a crime, but we're not going to arrest this person, but we're going to do restorative justice. So if they've stolen something, they've given it back intact. If it's something to do with drugs, they will no longer take... there's loads of different ways. If it's a low-level crime, then it's a good way of dealing with it, because it's still recorded as an incident, there's things where...
Does that not get put on that person's record? Is that kind of a bonus?
It's on there, but if you did a quick criminal check, it wouldn't come up because it wouldn't be recognised as a criminal offence. If they went for a job where there was a higher level of vetting, teaching, nursing, things like that, pardon me, ooh, Guinness, then it would come up. But you say to people, this will happen.
Yeah.
There's things where you can do a caution interview, where you don't necessarily arrest, but if the situation suits, you can arrange for the suspect, if you will, to come into a station and give an interview without being arrested. That might be if there's issues with, because, sometimes it does happen that you have a suspect who's 80 years old and in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And it's just not conducive to take that person into a police cell. Or there might be childcare issues, or there might be more questions that need to be answered before you could go to arrest. So you have to have reasons, you have to have grounds, and you have to caution someone. And the first time you arrest someone, trying to get the wording of the caution right, because it's, and also your brain is, I didn't do it, but I've seen people start going into like CSI or you have the right to remain silent, Miranda rights, the American way, which is rubbish.
What's our way, the proper way?
You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be used in evidence.
Yeah.
So that's the caution.
And does it have to be exact every time?
No, it doesn't have to be word for word. You just have to get the gist of it.
Okay.
I saw someone sent me a tweet of a YouTube clip of someone arresting someone, and he literally, because of the situation, he just bangs cuffs on me and goes... and literally like that. It's hilarious. But officially, it's... as long as the wording can be understood.
Okay. Does the person you're arresting have to acknowledge that they've understood it, or is it just as long as you've said it and they've heard it?
If you've said it and it's clear, because obviously, as I said, arrest is one of the situations where your body worn must be on. Mm. If you can if it can be clearly seen that you haven't just done the or you haven't just mumbled it, you know, if you can see that the person has seen your lips move, the only situation where it might be different is there's a language barrier or they're intoxicated. But most of the time, as long as you have, it can be seen that you have clearly said the words to the person. Obviously, once someone's been cautioned, if they say anything after that, you know, you've said to them anything you do say may be used in evidence.
Do you have to take that down afterwards?
What they say?
Yeah.
If it's of a, if it's of a significant nature.
Okay.
If they say something like, yeah, I did do it, I killed the fucker. Or, no, I didn't call him this. Yeah. Or, no, I didn't take fucking anything. I wasn't here. I was in another town.
Do you rely on your body-worn camera for that, or do you have to get your notebook out?
Bits of both, really. Obviously, with the days of body-worn cameras, it sort of negates. We still all have pocketbooks, which we have to carry with us at all times. I will try and write as much down as I can.
Yeah.
And what you might, you know, one of the things you're encouraged to do, even though it's on body-worn, is if someone said it when they've calmed down, if they've said something very significant, you will offer them to say, right, I have it on body-worn. You have. See, you said that to me. Are you willing to sign that to say that you said that?
Oh.
They can, someone can refuse to sign, but you can offer it to them.
So is it an actual physical notebook?
Yeah, it's a pocketbook.
But you also have an iPad as well, don't you?
I have a tablet. I have a tablet.
So what's that for?
That's for everything.
Oh.
So it all depends on the situation. It's all about timescape and everything. But a lot of a high majority of our work, which we'll probably talk about in the third episode, is paperwork.
Oh.
So you need that tablet for the very nature of paperwork.
I think you told me a very lovely story before about an elderly lady.
Which one was that?
I was talking to Paul ages ago about when you actually get the time to do paperwork. Like, you're obviously running between jobs and things like that, and you found a little moment in time where you and your...
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I was with my friend. We were in a car. It was a Sunday evening, and we were the late shift, so that's 2 till 11. And we'd been running around all day. And we finally got 5 minutes, about 9 o'clock. And we didn't want to go back to the police station because there's a finite amount of desks and chairs. And we thought, well, we've got our tablets. We'll just sit here and do our updates here. So we're sitting in the car. So it's January, February. It's quite cold. It's obviously, it's 9 o'clock at night, so it's quite dark already. And we're both sitting in the car, and we're both on our tablets. He's in the driver's seat, I'm in the passenger seat. And this old lady just walks past and does the old lady tut very loud, like, oh, and had a go at us for obviously just playing on our phones or playing games on our iPads. And you at one point, you can't really say, no, look what I'm doing. But yeah, she was literally, you could tell she was going, what's the world coming to? We're paying these police and they're just sitting there playing their bloody games. And you're like, oh, I'm putting a report.
Classic. Do you remember your first foot chase? Do you do foot chases?
I've only really had one foot chase in 4 years, and it was only about less than a year ago. And it was a guy, I remember he'd been arrested, and I was the operator of the police van. So when someone gets arrested, we take him in a police van to custody. And someone had arrested someone in a block of flats. And as they came down the stairs, they'd managed to slip the control of the person who was holding them. And they ran across the road. So handcuffed in the back. So they have their hands behind their back. I just ran across the main road.
Wow.
And I ran after him. And I think he was shocked that someone had run after him. So he literally he turned the corner and he sort of stopped and looked at him and went, all right. It's like, well, we weren't going. What did you think we were going to do? Do you think we're going to let you go? See, I haven't had a proper foot chase, so to speak. Whether I'm confident I could do it, I haven't got a clue.
So they're not that common, really? Is that something that you tend not to do?
They are and they're not. I think it all depends on the situation. I think you've got to be very realistic, because sometimes when people run, they're running for the reason that they know where they're going.
Yeah.
And if you go in any, you know, not just the borough I work on, but any borough in London has these estates that are rat runs. And if you have little gang, you know, little gang nominals, little kids who all work together, or, you know, older guys who know what they're doing, they will allow a police officer to chase them. And then it's almost like that scene in Jurassic Park, you know, like, clever girls. You know, it's like that.
The velociraptors from either side.
You run down a little thin alleyway, and then when you get to the other side, and, oh, there's all his mates.
Yeah.
Or to use a vernacular much better than I love, when Han Solo runs down the corridor and then runs back with about 30 stormtroopers. Yeah, that one.
I guess that probably goes back to the days of PC Blakelock, wasn't it?
The
Tottenham riots.
Yeah,
was that people who don't remember? This was I think it was late 70s, early 80s. Policemen went into an estate,
Broadwater Farm.
Well remembered, went into Broadwater's farm. I think he was by himself at the time. He got cornered and he got horrifically murdered. So I think maybe from that point onwards, the police were like, quite
well,
rightly.
Well, we're very strict in our rules. You don't go anywhere by yourself.
Yes.
And we used to do foot patrol.
Yeah.
We still do it, but in groups. So there's always, you know, you're in twos, but there's always, you know, someone else around you can see. But, you know, you don't go anywhere by yourself. It's just not worth it. Not worth it.
And I guess because we live in an era now where there's cameras almost everywhere.
Yeah.
You probably almost don't need to.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time, whenever we get called to a job, you'll actually hear on the radio go, you know, CCTV. And you'll have someone in the CCTV of the local council.
Yeah.
And you'll say to them, have you got any cameras covering Smith Road, Junction of Jones Road?
Nice.
And if they say yes, you know, if it's one of these swivel cameras, they can go in, or they might go, yes, we have, why? And you say, well, this has happened 5 minutes ago, can you have a look at the footage and stuff like that?
Wow.
So, you know, there's things that can help us.
In your, I'm going to sound like such a yokel now, in your police car,
yeah.
Do you have the computer where you can type in people's names and get all their data?
Yes, we have access to the PNC database.
Oh, nice.
We have little tablets, much like the ones that we carry, are actually mounted in the cars. So you can get all the information you need on the way to a call. Because as you can, we have several grades of call, but the two main ones we have are I grades and S grades. So I grade is immediate grade.
Mm.
And S grade is standard, I think, if I remember rightly. If an I grade comes through, you have 15 minutes to get there.
Wow.
If an S grade comes through, you have an hour to get there. So obviously, if we have a domestic incident, or we have a burglary where the suspects are still in, or, you know, we're being told that someone standing outside a police, a tube station is getting punched to buggery, then that will be an I grade. We'll make progress as quickly as we can. And that's where we have the two levels of driver. So we have a response driver who is... had a special driving course to drive at speed, and then you have a panda driver.
Yeah.
So pandas is what people used to refer to our cars as, and they will be, you know, they will be able to drive, obviously, and they would have passed a further driving test in the police, but, you know, you just make progress as fast as the speed limit allows.
God. Have you ever been in a situation like you were just saying? You've gone into a burglary and you know that the burglar's still on site.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And you just, you know, I've been since before I had a taser, and since I've had a taser, depending on what you've been told about the burglary, you have no idea what that person has.
Yeah.
So they might have just chanced their luck, and it might be a homeless person just seeing an open window, wants someone to sleep for the night. Could be someone with a crowbar who's ready to, you know, do something. Could be someone with a knife who's prepared that if there's someone in there, they can say, you know, give me the cash or whatever and I'll stab you.
Yeah.
So you're very wary of that.
Yeah.
Officers with tasers will probably lead the way, and they will draw their tasers, and you will shout as you go into each room and each floor.
Yeah.
You say, officers with a taser, show yourself, basically. So before I had a taser, I wouldn't have necessarily been the first in, but I would have gone in, maybe drawn my baton or whatever, just in preparation. I've been in first since I've had a taser, and it is just literally a case of you pull your taser out, you have it ready, not aimed like some kind of American cop movie, but you have it in your hand so that you can use it if necessary.
Wow. You mentioned that you spend a lot of time in cars.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in... do you remember your first high-speed pursuit?
My first... Well, as you join the police, it takes a while for you to become... especially as a non-driver, you're always an operator.
Okay, what does that mean, as an operator?
Well, that just means you're not driving, basically. You're a passenger.
Are you, like, navigating? And
you will navigate, depending on... Because we have drivers on my team who've been working on that borough for many years. So, you know, it's actually... It sounds lazy, but it's a pleasure to be their operator, because there's not going to be a street they don't know.
They've probably got better knowledge than taxi drivers.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yes, you have to... So, as a panda, because you have that hour grace to get somewhere, it gives you time to learn how to direct people.
Yeah.
Because as I said, as a non-driver, I'll know the quickest way to get somewhere, but that's taken into account going down an alleyway or being able to walk on the pavement down a road that's actually one way for cars.
Okay.
So it's just getting used to what's allowed. And then as you, you know, as you show proficiency at that, you know, my, in my case, I think it's probably 6 or 7 months, you're allowed to operate for an IRV driver. An IRV, basically, that's the response drivers who take the eye grades, because obviously they need to get somewhere very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because you start to learn the borough. My particular borough has maybe 3-4 main roads.
Yeah.
And as long as you know how to get to that main road, you're all right. So yeah, my first response, I genuinely can't recall, but I think I know who it would have been with a guy who was who's since left the job, but who's very, very good, very fast. I remember my first one on the hangover because I nearly vomited all over the car.
Oh my god!
I think the first time you do it, the adrenaline, because you're thrown around the car because they have to get there fast. Obviously, you're on a seatbelt and everything like that. But it's the adrenaline, because you know that if you're going there at speed, there's a reason you have to be there. So it's going through your head, depending on what the job is. Am I going to have to restrain someone? Am I going to have to give first aid?
Is that what you're doing at the moment, thinking ahead of what's going to happen?
Yeah. So your first act is to get the driver there safely.
Yeah.
And the second act is what's going to happen. That's why you've got your computer there to see what's there. But the one thing I will say about fast drivers is that they are taught to drive fast.
Yeah.
But they are also taught to drive sensible.
Yeah.
So if it's a straight road and there's no traffic, then the foot pedals down, they have the skills to be able to drive at speed. But if it's full of traffic, you know, you stop. You slow down. I think I always get the motto wrong, but that's because I'm not a driver. It's better to arrive safely for yourself and to be able to deal than to ride like a nutter, maybe cause an accident to you or others.
Yeah.
So, yeah. At the same time, you know, as I said, if you get a straight road, you know, the early hours of Sunday or Monday morning, if you're doing a night shift and you've got to go along a stretch of an A road or something like that, and there's nothing in front of you, it's not a case of, you know, enjoying it and going, hey, but it's like, foot can go down, I need to get there as soon as possible. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think it would be more exciting for those of us who are kind of civilians watching it, but for you, it's work and you're focused on like an hour ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we mentioned this before, but the first time, I think whether it was your first day or first week, you went to a suicide.
Oh, my first day.
Oh, was that your very first day?
My very first day, I went to, sadly, a man who'd taken his life through a lot of drugs, a lot of prescription drugs, and a best part of a bottle of whiskey. And as I said, it was December. He was in a park area, and he died, sadly. And my first job at 7:30 on that morning in December was to search the body.
Wow.
So that was interesting.
So what was the purpose at that moment?
What, to search the body?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you know, when you go into situations like that, and, you know, we were actually talking about this briefly, you know, people can commit murder but make it look like a suicide. So you have to scan the situation. Now, in that case, yeah, there was a gentleman there, empty couple of, I don't know what you call them, the poppers for pills.
Oh, yeah, blister packs.
Blister packs, that's it. There were several empty blister packs. There was a mostly gone bottle of whiskey or two. You search the body to see, firstly, if there's any other wounds.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, people have done that. They've, you know, not in my experience personally, but people have done that where they've gone, oh, it's obviously a hanging, it's obviously a suicide. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when their body's lifted by the coroner, oh, there's 3 bullet holes in his back kind of thing. So, you know, you search the body. And also, you know, very nature of it, just to find out who the sad person is, you know.
Yes.
Because you have to, unfortunately, inform someone.
So is that a crime scene at that moment?
It's not it's a crime scene until proven otherwise.
Okay.
So if in that situation, once it's quite obvious that the man has sadly taken his own life, then it's no longer a crime scene. Yeah. Unfortunately, it was a park, well known for people walking their dogs and getting through. You know, you have to try and be respectful, both of the person who's passed away, but also kids could be running through there to go to the playground and you're standing around a dead body. So yeah, so it's not so much a crime scene as in you're getting CSI London down, but you have to just keep people away from it for a certain amount of time.
Have you ever been on a drugs bust?
Yes, I have been on a drugs warrant.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I have been on a drugs warrant. I helped organise one. But, well, when I say help, my colleague did the vast majority of the work. I think I just did a little bit of heavy footing. But, yeah, I have been. I have been in there where the door's been kicked out and you've got a safe full of money and drugs and the like. It's fun.
Fantastic. Was it as you'd imagine it to be, or...?
That particular one, no, because basically we kicked the door down and then the old lady who lived there, who was a bit of a drugs baron, as soon as she saw us, she was like, yeah, drugs are in there, money's in there, there's more drugs over there.
Oh,
and there was
wow.
a little part of me, it's like, oh, I want to be able to go, look what I found, and yet get the flick knife out with a big bag of white powder and do the old dipping. I mean, you don't do that. You really don't do that.
Do you not rub it on your teeth to check and go, yeah. Oh, this is high grade?
Yeah, that's high grade. That's high grade Colombian. No.
I guess with her, she's so used to kind of police turning up, she knows to go, if I just deal with this quickly, you can off. And
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, you do a little bit of everything. You know, doing the door's always fun.
What about protests?
Oh, yes.
I take it. What was the term you used for those before?
Public order.
Public order.
Yeah, I am. Well, you actually go through a separate level of training for public order training. So I have been public order trained for the best part of 2 years now. So
was that at Hendon as well?
No, it's in Gravesend.
Oh, okay.
So it's out in Kent. It's they sort of do the whole of it. I think they do London and a couple of other boroughs. And it's literally a village. It's like one of these military villages. It's just built a bit of built. It's like Blazing Saddles. It's just the front of houses.
I'm interested.
And you're in full riot gear, so you're in padding, you've got flame resistant overalls, you've got a big shield, you've got a helmet with a visor, and you know, in the training they throw petrol bombs at you, they throw bricks at you.
Wow.
They're training you to deal with it a riot situation. So yeah, we've been doing that for about the best part of 2 years.
How did that feel to have bricks and petrol bombs thrown at you?
It's weird because they train you how to deal with it. But yeah, the petrol bombs are very weird because everything you're given is flame resistant. So you're not going to burn, but it's a petrol bomb. So they will throw a bottle of petrol at you. And as soon as it smashes, you are just alight for a couple of seconds.
Fuck.
And it's very surreal because you feel the heat, but you know you're not burning. And it's
shit.
But
and obviously they train you how to put it out as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, the nature of that is normally puts itself out because there's only a finite amount of petrol to burn.
Okay. Oh, wow. And what about bricks being thrown at you? That's almost...
They
missiles.
Are wooden bricks, to be fair, but they're still hefty. But, you know, if you think about it, you've got full padding on.
Yeah.
You've got a helmet on, and it teaches you to not do stupid things like people who leave visors up or to bring their guard down. If you're on a public order event, if you're dealing with something like that, you have to be on your wits.
Wow.
But then again, a lot of these things are just sitting in a van waiting for something to happen. It's very rare you have something as big as the Tottenham riots or, I think, Tommy Robinson and his ilk of Neanderthals running around.
Stephen
London.
Yaxley, whatever his real
name
is.
Oh, yeah, Stephen Yaxley, Lennon, Headley, Swedley, Svali.
Yeah, he's very posh.
Yeah, very posh. An arse of a man. I've been public order trained. So we go to things like Extinction Rebellion have just had their 2 weeks of action. So we deal with them.
What is your role at that point when you're guarding a protest? Is that the word?
A protest is a peaceful protest is a riot. That's fine. So your job there is literally to make sure that it stays peaceful.
Yeah.
Or to make sure that it doesn't break any laws, like obstruction of the highway or something like that.
Yes. And obviously, you can legally protest and you can apply to the council
to protest.
Of course
you can. Yeah. It's just if you take it too far.
Yes.
And then our job will be to stop it going too far.
Yeah.
Mostly in that case, with something like it, so it'll be about dispersal, about just telling people, you know, we can't allow you in.
Yeah.
We know that what you're going to do is going to be illegal. And it's about engaging and explaining with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things like the Tottenham riots or many years ago, the 2011 riots and many things like you spoke about, the Tottenham riots and Broadwater Farm. You know, that's about stopping rioting, stopping like looting and criminal damage and violence against people.
Yeah.
Touch wood. I haven't been involved in anything too serious as yet. I think the closest I've had is being at the Stamford Bridge for the Champions League final last year and have a very drunk Chelsea fan who didn't realise how drunk he was try to kick me and fall over, which was actually quite funny.
Classic Chelsea fans.
Oh, yeah. Knuckle draggers, one and all.
Surely they should all be arrested.
Well, just for being Chelsea fans. Yeah, I wish. I really do wish.
You were, I hope you don't mind, you were telling me a story ages ago about, again, another old lady when you were at one of the protests.
Yeah. I'm an old lady magnet. So we were, this is my borough. When you do public order, you will be sent to wherever in London is necessary. But we were, in this case, we were sent to Hyde Park to Speaker's Corner. And all these people, no, it was anti-vaxxers, the COVID deniers. And they were, you know, saying it was disgusting that we'd come down. But these people were not necessarily the anti-vaxxers, but there's people who jump on the bandwagon who just want to have a fight.
Yeah.
And these people were beating the merry hell out of colleagues of mine. And this woman just turned up with a camcorder and she stood in front of us. And we'd just been told to get off the van and we were all standing in a line and we thought we were going to go in to help our colleagues. And she came out with a camcorder and went, "Oh, you police, why don't you fuck off? You think you're so special. You're nothing. You are nothing, blah, blah, blah." And then all of a sudden, our sergeant got in his earpiece going, "Right, they're not kicking up over here. They're going over the other side of the park. So everyone run back onto the van. We'll drive around there." So she literally went, "Why don't you fuck off?" And the minute she said that, we all ran away. And she was well known as she has a YouTube channel and all this. And all I remember is running back to the van thinking, it's going to look like she's just told 10 6-foot-2 burly males in full riot gear to go. And we've all just run away in a Benny Hill style. All it needed was...
Classic. It's sod's law. What has been the most surprising moment in your first year as a policeman?
Oh, God. Good question. That I survived the year, to be honest.
Demanding?
It was demanding. It was tiring. Getting your head around shifts. Getting your head around paperwork. Just getting your head around... I mean, yes, it's fun, and I've made true lifelong friends with these people. We come from all walks of life, all different ages. Mm. But you do become very, very family because you see so much of each other and you do have to look out for each other. So it's nice creating new bonds. But yeah, I mean, we have a laugh, as with any walk of life. You feel like you make a difference. You go to some awful things. And I think getting your head around the fact that you do see the two extremes of people. You see angels and you see absolute scum. And it's just trying to find a healthy level with it. I know with the early extra miles you talked about mental health and things like that, you have to look after yourself because you do see some shit. So I think that was the most surprising thing, the amount of times I'd go home and go, I'm not sure if I can switch off from there.
Yeah.
But you do, because you get the support and you're all in the same boat. I mean, there's people that I've worked with, I've known for 4 years, and I consider them to be some of my best friends.
Great.
Apart from Michael. Oof.
Yeah, there's always one. Following on from that, have you ever had to give a death notice?
Yes. I've never had to do it in person, but I have had the misfortune of doing it over the phone unnecessarily. Unfortunately, we found it was probably about the height of summer 2 years ago. We found a gentleman who passed away many, many months before. And we couldn't find any notes of it. Part of the things when you have something like that, when it's quite obviously an elderly person, is that you will try and find next of kin details so you can arrange for someone to go and speak to them. But couldn't find anything. All I could find was a little piece of scrawled paper that had like the name of the GP, name of the local pub, blah, blah, blah. Rang the GP, no next of kin. Rang the pub, only knew him as... whatever the gentleman's name was. And then there was a set of names. So I thought I'd ring these up. I rang the first name. Oh, it's sad he's gone. Oh, and I just knew him from the pub and the Irish Centre and stuff like that. And then I rang about the third name. It's like, oh yeah, did you know so and so? He went, yeah, that's Dad. I had to do that over the phone. I mean, it was an estranged family, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but yeah. It's not a nice experience. I've had many friends who've had to do it, but you know, It's part of the job.
Is it rewarding in a way to know that you've done something good for the family in
yes.
a way?
Yeah. I think most of the things that we do have got a reward to them. It may not feel like it at the time.
Yeah.
But you know, as long as you do the best job that you can.
Yeah.
With the shitty situation that you're in, that's all you can ask.
No, exactly. I think that's it. I think that kind of covers your first year as a policeman. Right. And in the next episode, we're going to go just your regular day as a copper. But before that, we need to finish
these pints. Cheers.
Lovely. Oh, that Caffrey's is good. God bless it.
God bless Caffrey's and God bless 1996.
And of course, Guinness.
God bless Guinness and all who sail in it.
See you soon, folks.
Bye now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, ladies and gentlemen, how was that? Did you enjoy it? Thank you to everyone who's given feedback for their previous episode. Exactly the same as the way I approached it. Everyone was kind of like, oh, I didn't know if I'd enjoy this. But actually, because I'd kind of prepped the questions not knowing the answers, it kind of opened my eyes to kind of things I wouldn't normally ask a policeman. Do you know, everyone would normally ask, big questions about kicking down doors and things like that. Me, I thought if we just focus on the small details that everyone just takes for granted, we may get some interesting answers and questions. And I think we did. So, that was part two. So thank you to Paul for that. It was good fun. And yes, we enjoyed the beers. They were absolutely delicious. And there's more beer to follow. Don't forget, people, next week is part three. But before we get there, let's dive into some quiz questions. Okay, there's 10 in total. I will give you the answers very shortly. So, question number one. Nice, easy one to start with. What was Paul drinking? Question two. Ooh. What was I drinking? Slightly harder one there. Just going to open up this a little bit bigger. There we go. Question number three. What is the nickname? Come on, Michael, learn to read. Question number three. What nickname is the beat helmet given? So in this episode, Paul makes reference to his beat helmet as something. What is that nickname? Question number four. How long is a regular police shift? Question 5. What is on Paul's list of to-dos in terms of arrests? So he's got two kind of arrests that he wants to achieve. What are those? Question number 6. What are the two grades of incidents police are called to? So two grades were mentioned earlier on. What are they? Question 7. I don't know why I'm repeating that question in a different way. It's basically, it's a bit idiotic, isn't it? Question 7. How long do police have to respond to each type of incident? I almost just repeated that question just in a different way. Gonna have to stop doing that. Annoying, Michael. Question 8. What type of case did Paul go on his first day? I think the reason is because I've badly written these questions. Question 9. I called it a drug bust, but what is it actually called? Control yourself, Michael. Try not to rephrase the question. And question 10. I called it protests, but what is it actually called? Brilliant. I just want to say a big thank you to two Patreon subscribers, people who've become new Patreon subscribers. So it's very much appreciated. Very much appreciated. Sorry, there's a little burpee just popped out then, which is a bit rude of me. Thank you to the new Patreon subscribers who are Stacey Finnegan and Shean Lovett. I thank you. And of course, a thank you to Darren DeRosa for your very kind donation. That really is appreciated. Just to say, as of the day that I'm recording this, we're going to do the answers to the questions very shortly. But as of today, as I'm recording this, it is the fourth anniversary of Murder Mile. Yay! I would have planned something, but I just didn't think about it. It was, you know, busy at the moment, lots going on. I just looked at my diary and thought, oh shit, it's the 30th of September. 30th of September 2017, I launched Murder Mile. I'd launched the walks about 2 years before that, but I'd made the decision to do the podcast as well, and that was my first episode. Originally, I was going to put out an episode on the 1st of October, They Walk Among Us, wonderful, wonderful British true crime podcast, hugely successful, were doing a meet and greet in London. And I wanted to go and meet them because I was a big fan, still big fan of them there, of course. There's other true crime podcasters there. I think Adam from UK True Crime was meant to be there, but unfortunately he didn't turn up. So I think we replaced him with a mask of Alan Partridge. So that was a lovely day, really good evening. But because I knew I was going to meet up with other true crime podcasters while I was there, I deliberately put out my episode a day early, just so I could turn up there and they could say, oh, hello, are you a listener? And I could go, no, I'm a true crime podcaster. I had one episode. One. But you know what? We all start there. So I just wanted to say a big thank you to everyone for listening to and supporting Murder Mile over the years. It's been really fantastic. Your kind words and support and has really helped. Obviously, as we all know, do you know, there's been some ups and downs with Murder Mile. We've had some scary moments. Do you know, I almost shut it down once. But you know what? Even with me almost shutting it down, it was actually the love and support of the listeners that really kept this going. So, do you know, if it wasn't for you guys, Murder Mile would have died 2 years ago. Maybe almost 3 years ago. But 4 years on, we're still going. God help us all. Oh, dear Lord. Anyway. So, thank you very much. So, yeah, that's why I did that little belt. Birch belt? Oh, I've gone all over the shop. I did a little burp because I've just had some cake. Oh, it's lovely. I had an iced finger. What else did I have before that? Oh, I shoved a donut in my face. If you go onto any of my social media accounts, you'll see me shoving a massive donut into my gob. So that was good. Also, we've just come back from CrimeCon. Really exciting weekend. Really lovely. Really was a chance to... There's lots of reallys there. Really, I didn't get to watch any of the shows because I was on Podcast Row all day. But it was lovely to meet everyone, to kind of finally meet a lot of listeners and just to say hi to everyone. Everyone was really lovely and fantastic. We were kind of half expecting, you know, everyone would be lovely, but then we get some real weirdos. Everyone was lovely. What's going on? Maybe I was lucky. Maybe just everyone who listens to Murder Mile is just lovely all round. Not all round as in all round. Oh, dear. Oh, Michael. But no, it was great. So thank you to everyone who turned up. It was really lovely to have a chance to chat to you all. You know, that was really nice. Thank you to everyone also who came to Murder Mile Live. It was a last minute decision. There was some space about a week before the organizer said, do you want to do a live recording? And I was like, yeah, sod it. So I did episode 16, the Richard Rhodes Henley, the Canadian masturbator episode. So there's about 25 of us in the room. I got everyone the audience to do the music and some sound effects. We did that and it was great fun because I got 25 people in a room to all. I said, right, now I need masturbation sounds. And there's 25 people going... So that was great fun. I really enjoyed that. So, yep, CrimeCon, is happening next year. I think it's the 11th and 12th of June. You can get tickets now. They're available. If you use the offer code MILE, you get 10% off. I will also give you some goodies as well as a way of thanking you for turning up. But me and the podcasters who are there, we've already started talking and we've already decided that we want to make it a little bit bigger as in terms of what podcasters are going to do. So we're going to put on some extra shows. We're going to do some Q&As. We're going to make it really immersive and exciting. So, yeah, next year's show is going to be fantastic. You can come and meet us on Podcast Row, but then come and listen to us doing stuff. I did a show with Paul from True Crime Enthusiast called Rippers. A little bit of an interesting one, slightly controversial. That was kind of the idea. We wanted to throw up the idea into the air and say rippers really isn't a topic. You know, we shouldn't really be calling murderers rippers. It's too sensational. Do you know, we had a lot of fun. So hopefully we're going to do some more of those in the future as well. So it was really exciting time. It was hectic. Unfortunately, I went out with most of the people I went out with. True Crime Enthusiast, Lady Justice, Twisted Britain, Night Before. There's quite a few. There's a real Morbidology, Crime Lapse were there. There's, oh God, just everyone who was there, we kind of all went out down the pub. And then, unfortunately, we found a pub around the corner that was open till 3 a.m. So we did a lot of boozing. And then I woke up in the morning and I was like, ah, shit. So we boozed a lot, so I was a little bit tired. But I have to say, hopefully I'll be releasing the Murder Mile Live episode, hopefully soon when the edit comes through. But I have to say, it's one of the best recordings I've ever done in my life. I did it in 26 minutes. And normally a recording of that kind of an episode will take an hour and a half. Maybe it was just nerves having people there. It was good. So, yeah, join us at CrimeCon next year. It'll be a lot of fun. So let's do the answers to those quiz questions, ladies and gentlemen. Question number one. Right, get ready. What was Paul drinking? He was, of course, drinking a Guinness. He turned up that day, as I mentioned before. It was a nice hot day. I went down the shops and got some ice. I got some Guinness Original. We cracked it open. Big smile on his face. He was a happy bunny. Just to say, ladies and gentlemen, I was mostly ladies, but of course, didn't you know? I haven't actually asked Paul this, so who knows? Folks, if you like the sound of Police Constable Arsenal Guinness, oh man, he's going to hate me for saying this. He is currently a single man. So if there's any ladies listening who are like, oh, he sounds lovely, he is on the dating scene. So, serving officer, man in a uniform, do you know, if you're a fan of the Guinness, you're a fan of, Arsenal, you know. All I'm saying, maybe we'll do a competition, win a date with Police Constable Arsenal Guinness. Guinness, get in touch with me, see if that's a feasible idea. Right, question number two. What was I drinking? I was drinking Caffrey's. Me and PCAG, I can call him Paul here, that's fine, because we all know that. Literally, when he cracked open his Guinness and he looked at my Caffrey's, he went, oh, Caffrey's. And both at the same time, I was like, I know. I went into the shops. We haven't seen it served anywhere in years. I found it in one shop, got it cooled. It was delicious. It brought back the good old days. I used to go into this nice Irish pub just off Leicester Square. It's one of those fakey Irish pubs, but they do Caffrey's. And they do I can't remember the name. I quite like stouty things like that. There's one that's red, not direct. I'm sure it began with a D. Anyway, it was lovely. Used to drink that years ago. But Caffrey's, oh, what a treat! I might treat myself tonight because it is my birthday technically. I'm like the Queen. I've got two birthdays. Question number three: what nickname is the Beat Helmet given? So, of course, the Beat Helmet is the kind of the large conical helmet that a police are meant to wear. Ooh, there's a giant boat going past. I don't know how it got past, because there's a big workboat just up the canal, which is about 30 tons, a big steel thing, and it came loose. It's so big I couldn't pull it in, so I've no idea how they got past. What is the name of the beat? What nickname is the beat helmet given? Paul makes reference to it as the tit head. I don't think that's official police lingo, but if you've watched things like The Young Ones, when Neil becomes a policeman, like he goes around Warlock's house and Warlock goes, "All right, Neil, come in, take a tit off your head." I like that episode of The Young Ones when Neil becomes a policeman. Question four. I haven't even started drinking yet. Question four. How long is a regular police shift? It is 9 hours. Mm-hmm. Question five. What is on Paul's list of to-dos in terms of arrests? Paul, I'm hoping that you're getting all of these correct. Paul said that his to-do is to arrest someone for either possession of a crossbow or a hovercraft. Do you know what? We didn't dive into those. I would have loved to have asked the question, why are they so illegal? PCAG, maybe get in touch and let us all know, and I could post it on social media. Hovercraft, interesting. Question six. What are the two grades of incidents police are called to? That is an I grade, which is immediate, an S grade, which is standard. So, of course, an S grade would be if I were to get mugged and fall over in the street and possibly shot. An I grade would be if Eva has run out of cocktails or something like that. Do you know, that's the way it would be in my little world anyway. Question seven. How long do police have to respond to each type of incident? So an I grade is 15 minutes and an S grade is 1 hour. But as mentioned in the episode, Paul did mention that in some boroughs, especially the ones where they're very underfunded and understaffed, those numbers can change. Question eight. What type of case did Paul go to on his first day? It was, of course, a suicide. That must have been quite fascinating but terrifying at the same time. Do you know, you're faced with a dead body hanging from a tree. Horrible. Question nine. I called it a drugs bust because I'm an idiot. But what is it actually called? It's a drugs warrant. And question 10. I called it a protest. But what is it actually called? It is called a public order event. Well done, ladies and gentlemen. Hope that was good. Hope you all enjoyed that. Don't forget, next week we have part three of New Blue, which we will be diving into. What is it, Michael? Oh, it's his regular day. It's kind of questions about what really is a regular policeman's day. What do they do? What does their day consist of? Is it organised? Is it already predetermined? Is it kind of all emergencies? Do you know? Interesting questions like that. So, hope you're all enjoying that. After that, we're going to have 10 episodes of Murder Mile, regular Murder Mile episodes, which will lead us up until Christmas Day, just before Christmas, and then I will do a little Christmas special on Christmas Day. Lovely. Anyway, hope you all enjoyed that. That was New Blue Part 2. Stay safe, lots of love, and I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.